Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, and this Yom Yerushalayim, Tavshin Pei, is Daf Ayin Zayin, and we're holding right at the beginning of the Halak Perek introduced yesterday by Richie on Daf Ayin Vov Omud Beis. Hamotzi Yayin. So we finished the examples of solids, foods that we were talking about yesterday, to bring out the Klal Katan. In the previous parak of Klal Gadol, the Oat Klal Acher, and now we're moving on to other things like liquids and other issues. And over here, the Mishnah tells us that if you take out wine, the shear of taking out wine would be sufficient to mix with water in order to make yourself a mezigas hakos, to have a mixed wine-water cup. Now, it's not very clear, and the Gemara is going to explain what type of kos we're talking about over here. If you take out milk, it would be kdei gmiyah, enough to swallow. And we'll see the Tosfos says, it's two sheet of Tosfos really, that it means to fill up your cheek with. Davash, if you take out honey, it's enough to put on a katit. A katit is either an abrasion on the back of an animal from carrying things, or it means a human abrasion, meaning a sore of some kind. You take off shemen, enough. Remember, shemen in those days was used primarily as something that you rub onto your body, and that would be sufficient to be lasuch ever katan, enough to rub onto a small limb. Now, exactly how small, we're going to discuss in the Gemara. If you take out water, it would be enough to mix kilor. Kilor is that eye ointment that they would use. And it would be enough to mix with the kilor and to rub it in. So this makes a kind of paste. V'shar kol ha-mashkin, but normal liquids would be a shear of a revius. And this would be, as we'll see, is going to go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. V'chol ha-shofechim, any kind of sewer water or wastewater, would also be the shear of a revius, and the Mishnah is going to ask, why is that considered to be chashev if it's waste? Rabbi Shimon Omer, and here was the Rabbi Shimon that we spoke about yesterday, all of the shiurim, kulan b'revi'it, whenever we give the dinim of something that would be chashev of these liquids, would have to be a revius, and that therefore, even if you're carrying out milk or wine or honey, you're only chayev if you actually carry out revius. These little amounts that are mentioned over here, lo nemru kol ha-shiurim halalu, unless you were someone who actually had set aside these things, elo lematznieihem. So remember that this is the Rebbe Shimon that we said yesterday disagrees with the Mishnah that we had yesterday as well. And he holds that there is a minimal and a norm. But there's no such thing as a matznia that has no minimum. So the minimum that's mentioned in the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Shimon, are the recognized occasional uses that are made. The fact that you may have a personal need for something and you put in something even smaller into your medicine cabinet would not be mechayev you, says Rabbi Shimon, which is the opposite of the shita that we had yesterday in the Tanakama and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Fine. We'll discuss that later. But this, at last, we get to the Rabbi Shimon that we spoke about. So according to him, there's no such thing as these small amounts. Those are the occasional small amounts. So according to him, everything would be a revit. Now, when the Mishnah said when you take out wine, it would be sufficient to be able to mix a beautiful cup. What exactly is a beautiful cup? A kos shel bracha. A kosher bracha is called beautiful because you have to do all kinds of special things for it. And indeed, you have to beautify it. You have to wash it out. You have to wash around it. You have to surround it with talmidim, with or, and so on and so forth. All of the things we had, asar dvarim nemru b'kosher bracha. Because of that, we call it a kos yafet. Om rev nachun, om rev rabba baravua. Basically, how much is that? Well, a kosher bracha has to have in it a rova revit. One quarter of a revi'it of wine, because that this means pure wine, in order that when it's mixed in a standard mix of 3 to 1, 3 parts water to 1 part wine, that way it will have a revi'it. So the shear of the wine the wine that you're actually going to be drinking, the mixed wine, is one revias alug. And then if you take out sufficient wine to make that revias halug, that would be considered to be a shir that's chashev. And because of that, you would be chayev on 1/4 of a revias if you took it out. Amar Rava, actually, you can get this from the Mishnah directly. Afana nami tanina, because look, if you analyze the Mishnah you could see has to have a revias. Why? Because it doesn't make sense to say in the same Mishnah that says all types of liquids are a revias, when you begin and you say hamotzi yayin kedei mizigat hakos, and as the Braita just explained, we had a moment ago, what is meant by mizigas hakos, kedei mizigas kos yofeh, and that was the kosher bracha. And then at the end of the Mishnah, it says that the standard for the hotzah of mashkin is shar kol mashkin berevias. So it makes sense to say that you need to have, therefore, a rova revias to be chayev. Now, of course, this is making assumptions. The assumption is that the correct mixture of wine with water would be 3-1. Given that that's the correct mixture, then it makes sense that the amount that we're talking about, kedei mizigas kos yofeh, would be the amount that's needed for a revias, ultimately, since all of the other shiurim are revias. I think that makes sense. Now, from here, you can see that when you make kiddush, or you're saying a brocha de chasana, or birkas hamazon, in all of the cases, you would be talking about a cup of revias that was based on a rova revias of pure wine. This, of course, the assumption is rava lataime. Rava always sticks to his guns about this. And that's why Naftali is finally showing up here, because he wants to know how much water you allow to mix into your drinks. So, since Rava holds that the correct amount to mix with your wine, as Rava said, kol chamer delo daria chatlat maya, if you don't have a wine that is going to be mixed 3 parts water to 1 part wine, you can't really drink wine like that. That's not chamerhu. Okay, so that means, according to Rava, what do we mean by miziga? A proper dilution with water is 3-1. So given that that's true, then it makes sense to say that the Mishnah is telling us that a kosher bracha needs to be revias. Omer Abaye, I think that that is completely ridiculous, the whole thing, everything that you said. There's two things that are wrong about what you're saying, okay? Shtei tshuvot, by the way. First of all, it happens to be that if you recall from the Mishnah in Nida, one of the colors that is considered to be tame for blood is kemazug, yayin hamazug. So when we explain over there what is mazug, the Mishnah says it's not. Hamazug is 2 parts water, 1 part wine, and it's wine from the Sharon. And then it's saying that the standard dilution, if it's calling it mazug, would be 2-1, not 3-1. And the other thing that I think makes no sense about what you're saying is the assumption that we're going to calculate the amount of yayin that you take out, that is chashev, based on ultimate meziga. Does that make sense? I mean, currently, is the meziga here? No. The meziga, where's that water? Water? It's in the fridge. In the fridge. So you're counting the water in the fridge for the chiyuv of the hotza'ah of something that doesn't have the water because that water is somewhere in the fridge? Well, what sense does that make? You're going to tell me that I'm going to use the water in the fridge to combine with the wine, in theory, and that is going to make it chayev. Doesn't make sense. It's much more mistaber to say that somehow or other wine has a special chashivas, more than other liquids, and therefore a smaller amount is considered to be chashev. Is that based from the fact that you have a revias at the end? As far as I know, you wouldn't be able to show from this Mishnah anything at all about the I mean, maybe a half a revias is good for a kosher bracha. I don't know. You certainly can't prove that from the Mishnah. Amar Rava, what's your big problem over here? Your taina that it says in the Mishnah in Nida that we talk about two parts water to one part wine, what does that have to do with anything? The Mishnah over there, first of all, the Mishnah specified a particular kind of wine. It did not say standard wine. It said Yayin Hasher Oni specifically, okay? Now, the reason that the Mishnah said that is because Yayin Hasher Oni is weak wine. Maybe, I don't know, but it doesn't need normal dilution. Or the Mishnah is talking about something entirely different. What am I talking about? I'm talking about a kosher bracha that you're going to be drinking. The Mishnah is talking about standards for color calibration. So if I give you a standard for color calibration, that has to mean something about drinking? What's wrong with you? So when it says over there that in order to determine if something is the proper color of red to be considered to be dam, and I give you, this is the way to calibrate your color, take Yayin Hasher Oni and mix two parts water to one part, that tells you it's going to be good to drink? It's not going to be good to drink. So Hata Mishum Chazut, over there we're talking about how it looks, and here we're talking about Mishum Taima, and the Taima Baitve, you're going to need more water. And not to mention the fact that the idea of Mayim Bekadu Mitzarfim, it sounds so beautiful. Water in the fridge is going to be part of taking it out. So let me ask you something. And when you say, I'm taking out water, and it's going to be choshev because ultimately I'm going to be turning it into eye medicine. Where is the medicine? In the medicine cabinet. Thank you. So you're going to tell me I'm going to be mitzarif the medicine in the medicine cabinet with the water that I'm taking out? Well, obviously that's not the point. The point is that that amount of water is useful to mix. I'm not saying I'm going to mix it right now, but the idea is that I'm looking for a shiur that is valuable, because that was the idea. Things that will normally be useful. Okay, this is normally useful. What does that have to be? Why does it have to be that currently it's already mixed? It's the same thing as true over here. Basically, when we're talking about Mayim Bekad, Le'inyin Shabbat, what do we look for on Shabbat? We look for Midi D'Choshev, something that is valuable. This is of significant value. You're going to ask me, why is that? Well, I'll tell you, why is that? Because it's going to be enough to make a kosher bracha. But that doesn't mean that currently it's the kosher bracha. So, Avanami, HaKoshiv, I don't even understand what you're talking about. What is your objection? So, what, he can't stay for the Daf Yomi, Naftali? What's going on? They opened up the schools already. It's okay. We've got a Zoom. It doesn't transfer any kind of odors. So what indeed, what would you say indeed is the Svar of Abaya? I mean, it seems to be a ridiculous question on the surface, but the truth is it's a perfectly valid question. When you're talking about using one substance for another substance, so then obviously we're just using that as a benchmark for chashivas. That's all. See, we got Yedidya. So therefore, we should say, the here too, it's a benchmark for chashivas, says Abaya. No. Over here, you're being chayiv because you're taking out wine. Not because you're taking out something that can make wine. Okay, so if you're giving me a shear of wine, if you're telling me the reason the wine is good wine is because I can use this wine in order to drink in my revias of a kosher bracha, excuse me, I cannot. It's not true. This wine is currently not sufficient wine for me to be able to drink or to be able to use in a kosher bracha. So you're saying I can make it. So would you say the same thing is true about water, you know, or some other drink? I've got apple juice. I can always dilute the apple juice, and then I'll be able to have more. So therefore, I should be chayiv with less apple juice. Of course not. It's the substance that you're taking out. That's what's supposed to be kosher. Not to create a substance. That's what Abaya is tiny. Tana. So now, and we'll see from the following piece how relevant this discussion is. Because what if you dehydrate the wine? Remember, that was very common then. In Roman times, they used dried wine for transferring in the battle. So the soldiers would carry around dried wine. And Yavesh, the shear of the wine that you take out, is bekizayit. So says Rabbi Nassim. So what is the logic behind that? As we're about to see, the logic behind that is that if you start off with a revius, the dehydrated remnants of the wine will leave you with a kezayit. And we see that that's true because Rabbi Yosef says that Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda basically said the same idea. What was that? Rabbi Nosson says that a revius of wine, when it's dehydrated, turns into a kezayit. And we have exactly the same halacha of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda said that the Rishisha Devarim, now this, the reason we're quoting this from a Braita, even though this is a Mishnah in Idiots, is because the specific part of the Braita that's relevant to us does not show up in Idiots. And that's the last words that we're going to be using over here. That there are six things that are Mikulei Beit Shammai, Michumrei Beit Hillel. That doesn't mean that this is a complete list. It's what Rabbi Yehuda added in that, on that day of the opening up in Yavne. So he says that there were six things that he knows of that are Kulei Beit Shammai and Chumrei Beit Hillel. And one of these has to do with the blood of a nevela. So if you have the blood of a nevela, the Torah never mentions a chiyuv on blood. It says besaro. So what would be the din of the blood? So Beit Shammai said it's completely tahor. The Torah was never mechadesh a tuma when it comes to dam nevelas. Whereas Beit Hillel says it would be tummy. And Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda explained, and this is the Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda that we're saying is the same as Rabbi Nosson, that when Beit Hillel said that the dam is tamei, what they were saying was is that if you have a revius of dam, since a revius of dam can congeal, so it will dehydrate to the size of a kezayit, that's why it's tamei, because we give it the same din as a busser of a kezayit. So you see from here that Aliba Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda, if you start with a revius, you end up in dehydration with a kezayit. Taina Zabaya, this is also ridiculous. I don't understand. Obviously, the amount of dehydration is a function of the initial proportion of water to solids, right? So how do you know that one has anything to do with the other? You're going to tell me that congealing blood is the same as drying wine? Like, why would anybody come up with that? Dilmalohi. When it comes to Rabbi Nosson, I can't overcome Rabbi Nosson, not going to buy a revius. Why do I need a whole revius in order to end up with the kezayis? Because you're talking about something that does not really have much solids in it. So you need a full revius in order that when you lose the volume to dehydration, you end up with a kezayit. But blood is thick, and blood, therefore, maybe in order to get one kezayit, you do not need a revius. So maybe he wouldn't agree with Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda in the dinim of dam legabe Beit Hillel of Nevela. Or I could say just the opposite. I could say Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda claimed over there that all you need to get a kezayit is to start with a revius. That's true, but maybe he only said, remember, of course, that obviously the issue over here is not going to be settled by experiment, because the question is, what is considered to be fully dehydrated? So, I mean, I have no idea whether they're talking about the same idea of dehydration. It could be that what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda was calling dehydration over there was sufficient to give a proportion of one revius of liquid per one yielded kezayit of solid is only utilizing the standard of blood, because blood is thick. And not to mention the fact that it also forms its own connectors in the liquid when it starts to congeal. So you get a lot of reason to have less need for liquid when it comes to the revius, the leftover kezayis of dam. So that would be fine. That's dam de samich. But yayin, maybe in order to get a kezayit to the level of dehydration that he would hold Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, maybe he would say you need 10 revius. I don't know. But it's certainly possible that you need more than revius. I don't see any connection between the two. And v'chimafik pachot mikezayit l'chayev, according to that, if you took out less than a kezayit, you'd already be taking out revius. I don't see any connection between Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, but look what does come out from here. If we're talking about, and everybody's taking for granted, that in order to be able to get that kezayit, that certainly Rabbi Nosson is saying that you need to be able to dehydrate the revius in order to make a kezayit. Why the heck do I need to dehydrate the revius, gentlemen? Dehydrating the revius is including the 3/4 proportion of water, right? So I don't understand. Let me start off with the Rova Revias. I mean, wouldn't that be the correct way to do it? If the Rova Revias, you're telling me it's Choshev, because since were it mixed, which is the same as hydration, right? So were it mixed, that would be sufficient. So why, in the case of the dehydrated, can't we start off with the Rova Revias and say whatever we get out of a Rova Revias, that would be sufficient for me to rehydrate to a full Revias? So I don't understand. Either we're going to look at the Rova or we're going to look at the full Revias. So Rashi explains that you will not say in something that is currently incapable of being mixed because of the fact that it's completely dehydrated. So then it's not in a matzav to do a simple meziga with. You're going to have to first rehydrate it till it becomes what it was before. And therefore, I need the shear of the entire revias in order to be able to measure its dehydration. So again, this is because we're looking at the object as the thing that we're taking out, not something that is capable of ultimately creating the thing that we're taking out. And that's why we're looking for the full relationship between the entire revias and the gezias that you take out in the end. Now, the Mishnah says the amount of milk that you take out should be enough for a gemi'ah. How do you spell that word? Are we talking about a kidei gemi'ah with an olive? Or are we talking about bichdei gemi'ah with an ayin? Omer of Nachum bar Yitzchak, look at the pasuk. What did Eliezer say to Rivka? Hagmi'ini na ma'at mayim mikadech, with an olive. I'm assuming he knew how to pronounce that word properly. And therefore, the correct gemi'ah is with an olive. Okay, well, once we're talking about questions of how to pronounce Mishnahs in Shabbos, remember that in the previous parak, we talked about not including the gar'inim with the pits, when we were looking at the shiurim, right? Is that gar'inim with an olive, or is that a nice gar'inim like a Sephardic gar'inim? Who is going to eat this Ashkenaz gar'inim, for God's sake? It doesn't taste like anything. Omar Rava Bar Ula, that is clear. We just had that in last week's parsha. V'nigra mi'erkecha. What does v'nigra mean? Deduct. Well, that's what a pit does. It deducts. And that's exactly what the Mishnah was saying. Don't include the volume of the pit in the shear. And therefore, the correct way to talk about gar'inim is with an ayin, just like v'nigra mi'erkecha. Another lashon that we had earlier in the Masechet, once we're dealing with the whole Masechet, is it the, remember we're talking about allowing the glowing coals, right? So we're talking about the question of whether you can do over there the shehiyah or the atmana, and we use the word omemot. So they're not completely out. They may burst back into flame. They're glowing coals. Is that omemot with an olive, or is that omemot with an ayin? Omer of Yitzchak bar Avadimi, again, we're talking about a pusik. Arazim lo amamuhu. We're talking about that even the arazim of Gan Eden wouldn't be able to in any way detract from omamuhu, make him look a little bit extinguished, if you're going to look at how unbelievable the power of Ashur is. Okay, so then it's obviously amamuhu with an ayin. Another question. When we talk later on, I mean, let's talk about the whole Masechet, we might as well talk about later, right? So later on, we talk about the question of whether you're allowed to close the eyes of the deceased on Shabbos. So is it me'amtzim et hamet, or is it me'amtzim? Omar Rabbi Chiya bar Avraham Rabbi Yochanan, another pasuk, ve'otzeh me'enav merod bara, somebody who closes his eyes or averts his eyes from seeing anything evil with an ayin, and therefore that is the correct way of pronouncing it. Tana Rabbana, Hamotzi Chalav Shel Behema. We were talking about utilizing animal milk. How much milk? That was the shear that we're talking about, Kidei Gmiah. But how about human milk? Human milk was often used for things other than putting into baby bottles. So a human milk was very useful for making the mixture of the kilor for the eyes. And so was the white of an egg. So chalav shel isha, or loven shel beitza, is sufficient kedei litein b'mishifa shel kilor, to have one mishifa, one application of a kilor. And the amount of kilor that you take out would be sufficient to mix with water, because you don't have to use these thicker things like chalav isha, loven beitza, in order to use kilor. It's just useful, but it's not essential. When you say enough to mix the kilor, is that enough for an application of kilor, or is that a practical application? Because in a practical application, I need to put something on a Q-tip, and then there's always going to be a little bit that's absorbed in the Q-tip. So when I'm making the kilor, I mean, does it mean that the amount, if I would actually make it on the eye, and there would be nothing lost in the application, or are you talking about practical application together with the achiza, with what it takes to hold the Q-tip and the rubbing it into the eye? Take, don't know that. Okay, the next thing we said, honey, enough honey to put on an abrasion. Tana, kidei litein al pi katit. It's enough to put on the top of the sore area, or the, what do you call that, the... What's the name of the covering of a sore where the blood is congealed? Yeah. So you have to put on the top. So, boy, Ravash, does that mean al-katit means apumet akula katit? You have to cover the entire raised area above the skin with honey. Or when you're talking about apuma, the puma would be the highest point. So then what that would mean, just to put the honey on the mursha kamed katit. So you put it on the tip of the sore, and then the honey basically will affect the entire sore, but not including the hudrana, not including the entire reddened area around the outside, that's not included. Also, tekut. On Rivyut Amarab, you should know that in terms of sores, if we're talking about over here, the shear of a small amount of material, which turns out to have this application, and that application is enough for us to determine the shear of Hotzah, especially according to Tanakama. Nu, Bishlama, according to Rabbi Shimon, I understand you happen to have this need. But I mean, what we're saying, Libet Tanakama, is that because this thing, in these rare circumstances, is going to be used in that purpose, you have to realize that that is part of the fundamental way of looking at that thing. So I'm going to tell you something. When you look at nature and you see that the way, way things are interrelated in nature, and it occurs to you that there would be no way for me to get any practical use out of X, item X, you're wrong. Everything could have an application and therefore show up in the Mishnah in Shabbos. Because let me tell you something. You've got a snail, okay? What are snails good for if you're not French? That's the question. Well, it turns out that they're good for putting on a sore. You put that snail on the sore and it will cure the sore. And what about flies? I mean, come on, flies are useless. No, flies are actually very useful because if you got stung by a yellow jacket, you grind up some flies and you put it on the sting. And that takes away the sting. Okay. Mosquitoes, come on. Mosquitoes for sure are useless, right? I mean, that's the ultimate useless thing in the world. Just shoot them. Nope. Actually, if you were you got a snake bite, then what you want to do is create a mush of mosquitoes to put on the bite. Okay, so what good is the snake? Ah, the snake is good if you've got a chafafit, which is a kind of spreading boil on your skin. A samamit and a spider is good for a scorpion sting. So all of these things basically end up having a shear for Shabbos too, you know? And Echi Avile, well, how exactly would you use a snake to cure these skin diseases? Pay close attention, Barry. You never know. Is Barry still with us or did he give up? Oy vey, at the very wrong moment? All right, we'll have to send him in this remedy for boils. All you need to do is you take a black snake and a white snake and cook them up together, and then you rub the boil with that mixture. By the way, it's interesting, but one of the most incredibly rich areas of medical research is actually snake venom, as I'm sure you know, because of the amazing evolutionary history of the development of unique snake venoms and the way that they give you insight into pathways, into cells. It's absolutely astonishing. So, you know, maybe this has something to do with that. Tana Rabbana, there's five things that you would think, again, something that is completely useless and has no application to something that is big and lives in a completely different scale, is not true. There's five brilliant expressions of the idea that the chalash, something very weak, terrorizes something that is incredibly more powerful than it. One of this is the mavgia al ha'ari. So a lion is this gigantic thing. You'd think it would be afraid of nothing. But you've never watched the mouse that roars, have you? Aha. So according to Rashi, the mafgia is actually some tiny thing that it scares off its enemies with this absurdly loud sound that it makes. And therefore, when it creeps up on the lion thinks it's going to be attacked by a monster. Okay, but there's a more reasonable approach, which is the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai says that he's actually seen this and that it's used by royalty in their lion hunts. And it's a small type of rodent, which has very sharp claws. And what it does is it jumps onto the head of the lion. The lion can't dislodge it. The lion is going nuts trying to get this thing off of its head. And it digs into the skull of the lion until it actually uncovers its brain. And there goes the lion. And so that is a mafgia. And the lion is terrified of this thing. The emata yatush al apil. Now, if you were an elephant and you had a nose like that, and a mosquito would get into that nose, tell me, what would you do? And that's exactly the problem the elephant has with the yatush. Stay away from me. And emat samamit alakrab, the spider, this is talking about a spider that penetrates the skin of the scorpion and lays its eggs inside the scorpion. And that's, oh my God, a horrible way for a scorpion to die. And so the scorpion is terrified of this thing. And a sinunit is usually called a swallow, but it's a kind of bird that will fly under a nesher, under an eagle, and will insert its claws into the pinions of the eagle and prevent the wings from expanding so that the eagle cannot properly fly. And then it basically gets the eagle to crash, and that the eagle is terrified of. And then if you're a leviathan, you know, and you're the largest mammal in the sea, the last thing that you want is a kilbis, because that kilbis, it gets into the ear of the largest fish that there are, and it burrows into the skull. Oh my gosh. And that leviathans don't like kilbises. Om Revira Marab. What's the pasuk, beautiful pasuk, that expresses this idea that something tiny can nonetheless exert amazing power over something so many orders of magnitude greater? Hamavlig shod al az, that he, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is mavlig. Mavlig means mavligia leyagon. You can control an emotion. So who empowers the shod, the shadud, the weak, over the most powerful. And this, of course, is the way to remember daf ayin zayin. Hamavlig shod al Ayin Zayin. There. Now we'll always remember where these psukim are. Rabbi Zera once we're talking about everything under the sun, right? Rabbi Zera once found Rabbi Yehuda, who was standing by the door of his father-in-law's house, and he was in an amazingly good mood. He might have just been told that he just got a gift of a house for himself, but I never saw him in a mood like that. So I realized that he's not going to bite my head off no matter what I ask him. I never have a chance to ask him anything because it always has to be very serious, and I can never play games with him and ask him the fun stuff. So I figured, Rabbi Zera says, I figured today's the day if I ask him anything, I can ask him anything crazy in the world, and he's going to tell me. So I went over to him and I started asking him questions, you know. How come, always bothered me, that goats always get to walk in the front of the other animals? They'll always position themselves that the sheep will walk behind the goats. How do you explain that? And then the Imre follow. Omar Lein, well, that's obvious. The world was created that dark comes first and black is beautiful. And then comes light, right? So the black goats, the dark goats, they always go before the white. Same thing over here. Bereshit Chashuv Avodah Nevura. How come that sheep, they have this fat tail, which covers up their rear, and the goats, they don't have that beautiful fat tail? Well, of course, it's Rabbi Yehuda. What do we get from sheep? The material with which we cover ourselves. So, I mean, it's only right that the sheep should get its own cover, isn't it? So the sheep gets covered and doesn't go walking around exposed because we're mekasim. But hani de lo mekasim on minaya, we don't use the goats to cover ourselves. So because of that, they don't get the right to that beautiful tail. Makes perfectly good sense to me. Then I asked them, why is it that camels have short tails? I mean, it's a big animal, and you'd think that it ought to have a nice long tail to fit everything else about it. That's because it eats thorns. And if it was going to have a long tail, it might easily get hurt and caught up in the bushes that it goes to. Very interesting, says Rabbi Zeira. So how come a ox has a long tail? Ah, that, says Rabbi Yehuda, is because they often will be around areas where it's very wet or even swampy, and they've got a lot of these gnats that they got to get rid of, so they need a long tail to be able to get all over their body to be able to swat the gnats. Okay, how come the antennae of ants are soft? That always bothered me. This is like wild. So how come they, so Rashi brings another lashon which fits better. His answer was that it's referring to locusts, not ants, but he prefers the ants. And remember, this is kamsa ubar kamsa, as we always explain kamsa ubar kamsa, something that is completely meaningless, tiny, and absurd for you to get involved in. So how come a kamsa has got a soft antenna? Ah, says Rabbi Yehuda, because they're often found around willow trees, right? Now imagine what would happen to those poor ants if they had stiff antennae, okay? Because then when they would bump into something that was hard, then the antennae would split off. But the antennae is basically the main sensory organ of the ant. And if it wouldn't have an antenna, then it would be walking around blind, deaf, and dumb. And how could you do that to a poor ant? So because of that, obviously, they have to evolve soft antennae. And therefore, it would be nadio misavra, because as Shmuel explains, look, if you're really into experimenting with blinding ants, break off their antenna. So if that does something for you. But meanwhile, you see that breaking off the antenna of an ant is going to make it blind. I got another question for you, Rabbi Yehuda. Whew, I don't know how much he can keep on going and not get his head bitten off, but meanwhile, we keep enjoying the conversation. So why is it that a rooster, the eyelid of a rooster goes up from the bottom and covers over the bottom of the upper eyelid? That's weird. Ah, says Rabbi Yehuda, that's clear. They love jumping up on shelves or windows, or right? And that's what they will stay on at night, the dairi adape. Now, if because of its height, smoke gets in your eyes, and the ayo kitra, if any of that smoke would get into their eyes, oh my gosh, it would ultimately blind them. So they need to be able to completely seal off their eyes from that kind of stuff. Okay, I got a bunch of other questions that have to do with language. I want to know why certain Aramaic terms are like so much part of the way we talk. Let's say, why do we call a door a dasha? I mean, why don't we just stick with the delet, you know? That, says Rabbi Yehuda, that's because it's really a contraction of derech sham, the way to go. Okay, so it made sense. And why do we call a ladder a darga? How else do you get up to the roof? Derech gag. Dargag. That's why it's a darga. And why is something that you dip into, like a salad dip, or even more is the stuff that we use with that very sharp dip here in Bavel, why don't we call it matkolita? Because you never seem to finish it. So as you're keeping it, and it's already been in your fridge for 3 months, you're saying, Matai tichleta? When is this going to finish already? I wanted to buy a new bottle. Which equals matulita. When will it be finished? Amazing, okay? And why do we call a house beta instead of just the Hebrew bayit? That's because it means come and sit down. Boveitiva, come and sit down. So sort of like a welcoming kind of thing to call it a beta. And why would you call a little hut that is very cramped? Why do you call it a bikta? That's because we still use that term today. It's become the term for these little vacation homes because it's a bay akta. It's a place where you're going to get it squeezed. So it's narrow. Why do we call a mortar a kufta? Well, that's because, like we learned in Kalim just yesterday, what you do with it is you say, turn it over and sit on it if it gets a hole in it. So kofetiv. Why do we call bricks livni? Ah, we call them livni because of the three little piggies. If you make your house of bricks, so then the big bad wolf can huff and puff and try to blow your house down, but he can't blow your house down. And that's because livni are livne vini. They ensure that you will have a house for your grandchildren. And why do we call a hutza, which is like a fence that you make out of different, you know, like thatch from branches or reeds. Why do we call it a hutza? Because we're trying to show that it's not anything more than a chatzitza, meaning it's just very temporary. Why do we call a barrel a chatzpah? Because you use it for mining. Mining? Yes, you mine water. Chotzev mayim min ha-nahar. Why do we call a little tiny cup? We call it a kuza. Ah, that's because if, let's say, you're asking Richie for a little bit of Talisker, so what do you say? Come on, Rich, I just want kazeh, a little bit. What does it hurt? Give me a little bit. So the kazeh became the kuza, and it's a good way of getting yourself a free drink. Why do we call hadasim shutita? That's because when you dance with it, you look like an idiot. So shtuta. And that's exactly what people do at the weddings. They take the hadasim and they start dancing around. They all look like they're a bunch of nuts. So we call the hadasa itself the shutita, which of course is fascinating because hadas shote is actually puzzle for your lulav. And why do we call a washing container a mashikla? Because it's mashikula. This washes anything you throw into it. Why do we call a fancy washing a pitcher, a mashkilta, instead of a normal pitcher, because that's used for like important people. It's a mashia kalata. That's something that's used for the kala. Why do you call a mortar, a small mortar, an asita? Because you're looking at just this piece of wood that you dug a hole out. That's a chasirta. And why do you call the pestle, you call a buchna? That's because it's as if it's saying, come on, man, come on, and I'll beat you up. Bova kena. So the pestle is always announcing, come on in and let me show you what I'm going to do to you. Okay, what about, let's move on to clothing, now that I understand Kalim. Okay, why do we call that outside jacket that you wear a levusha? Oh, that's because it covers over your big stomach, not to mention the fact that it covers over your filthy shirt and your dirty tie, and therefore it's low busha. When you put that on, everybody thinks you're well-dressed. So it's a levusha, low busha. Well, what about that big overcoat, which that's called a glima? Why is it called a glima? Because it turns you into a golem. You've got nothing, you can't even make out what you are. You male, female, you just look like a golem. And why is something beautiful like a beautiful scarf, why would you call that a gulta? Because galei ve'etiv, you're going to first have to show yourself because you need to fold it because you're not going to be sitting before. So let me uncover myself and then we'll sit. I'm not going to sit on this and ruin it. Why do we call a bed a puria instead of just a mita? That's because beds are used for being fruitful and multiplying. So it's Purim V'Ravim. So Purim V'Ravim is a Puria. And why would you call a dry water pit, a bor zinkon. Never got that one. That's bor zenaki. There ain't nothing left in here. Why do we call the fancy sudar, like the that they use to wrap the turbans that they use from the Talmid Chachamim? That's because it refers to sod Hashem li re'av, sudra. And why do we call a palace an apadna? Apadna stands for apitchaden. This is the place to come to, buddy. Meaning anything that you need, you're going to end up over here. You got to pay either your taxes or your bribes or your influence, but it all comes to this door. Tanu Rabbanan, shlosha kozman shemaskinim mosifim gvura. There's three things that the older they get, the stronger they get, instead of getting weaker. And that's the big fish. Now, that big fish took a lot of years to become a big fish. But you try to reel in that big fish, and he gives you a heck of a ride, right? So then that means the older he gets, the stronger he gets. Same thing is true about a nachash, those big, gigantic snakes. They're strong. And a boar also gets very strong as it gets older. Anyway, now we can spend some time on our Mishnah, Shemen. Okay. So Shemen, what is the shear of Shemen? Kedei lasuch Eiver Katan. Now, there's two ways of reading that. Eiver Katan could mean the limb of a small person, or it could be Eiver Katan, a small limb, which could mean a small limb of a big person, or it could mean Eiver Katan Katan, right? Could mean a small limb of a little person. So it's not really very clear. And Amri Devei Rabbi Yanai, that the shear is Shemen Kedei Lasuch Eiver Katan, Shel Katan Ben Yomo. So the smallest, you take an infant, and you take his pinky, and then you take one bone of that pinky, and that part is called an Eiver. So that amount of baby oil would be enough to be Mechayev Yohan Shabbos. Meitvei, says in the Brayta Shemen, is Kedei Lasuch Eiver Katan, and a katan ben yomo. I mean, doesn't that mean an aver katan, meaning of a gadol? Or, what's the way to understand the second part, an infant? Or even an aver gadol of a katan ben yomo. So it's giving you two benchmarks. Isn't that what it means? I mean, that's a heck of a lot more than what the Devei Rabbi Yanai said, that it's an aver katan of a chitinok ben yomo. So it's like, well, no. I'm looking at Devei Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai would say the way to read the price is like this. Shemen kedei lasuch eiver katan, and katan meaning, and the word katan is referring not only to the katan of the eiver, but and katan is referring to the individual who is katan, in which case it would have to be the smallest, which would be a newborn infant. So that's what it's saying, exactly what I said. Kedei lasuch eiver katan, shel katan ben yomo. Now, is it possible that it's actually a machlokas tanoim about what the shear is, whether the katan refers to the eiver, the katan refers to the person, or, I mean, look, if you take a look in the brightness, it's like this. Shemen kedei lasuch eiver katan, vikatan ben yomo. Okay, that you just explained. Divir Reb Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Natan Omer, no, it's kedei lasuch eiver katan. I mean, so what are they arguing in him? What is he saying differently? So it must be that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is saying that it is an eiver katan of a katan. And Rabbi Nosson is saying, no, it's enough for the word katan to be referring to one or the other. So even an eiver katan, even of a gadol. Or, I mean, it could be an eiver gadol to katan. But, I mean, we would never go, according to Rabbi Nosson, so far as to say that the word katan refers to both the Eiver Katan of a Katan, that not. Eiver Katan, Shel Katan Ben Yomo. That's not big enough to be a big kosher. So that would mean that the Tana Devei Rabbi Yanai is basically the same as Rabbi Shimon Ben Elazar. And Rabbi Nosson argues? No. I mean, maybe, but you certainly can't prove it from here. It's possible that Kuli Alma Eiver Katan, the Katan Ben Yomo, maybe nobody holds that the Katan would refer to both. And the Machlokas over what Rabbi Yanai said means, forget about it. Nobody holds of the Rabbi Yanai Shita that goes on both. So what then are we arguing about? That Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Savar, that we're talking about either an Eiver Katan de Gadol or an Eiver Gadol de Katan ben Yomo, that is basically the same shear. So it gives you two benchmarks so that you can get what is being referred to over here. Is Rabbi Nosson Savar? Absolutely not. An Eiver Katan of a gadol, that is the correct shear. An eiver gadol of a katan ben yomo is not the same, and that would might be that even a large eiver of a day old infant might not be large enough to be the same size, and he would be potter. So in which case, maybe neither of these Tanayim hold like Rabbi Yannai. So you can't, if you find somewhere that it says Beferish not like Rabbi Yannai, you will not be able to bring a raya from here. My Havayala, what's bottom line about this issue? Tashma, the Tanya, there is another brisa, and the other brisa says, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Shemen kedela such ever katan shel katan ben yomo. And that says Beferish that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is definitely saying exactly what the Tana by Devei Rabbi Yannai would say. In which case, we stick to our guns and we're saying that actually the way that he explained that Braita is correct, and therefore Reb Nosson argues, and we have a Machlokas Tanoim. So we're sticking with our Machlokas Tanoim.